the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, I'm a little full.
Why is that?
I ate a shit ton of crow tonight.
About what? About coups?
About well, yeah, mostly coups. Mostly coups. Even though, like, I wasn't that hard on coups, I didn't think. I did tweet, though, at one point that I didn't understand not having green in there and putting coups in, and coups promptly hit two humongous three-pointers to end the game.
Kuz is a bucket getter, man. This is always going to happen. I'm more worried about the things that he has to change about him. Mm-hmm. But it was easy to forget because he hasn't had one since this is really the start of the season for him. That dude gets buckets. That thing that he did tonight right there is exactly why he's super important to this team.
Tonight's show is going to be pretty basic, pretty straightforward. We're going to enjoy a win. We're going to have some fun with it. I think there's some really interesting things to come out of this game. I want to start kind of with Kuzma. Also with Rajon Rondo. I want to start here. I think the Lakers are about to hit a bit of an identity shift.
In what way?
Well, so far this year, they have played as a defense first, kind of really physical team. Mm-hmm. And you add 50-ish minutes or so of Rajon Rondo and Kyle Kuzma to the rotation.
Your two favorite guys.
Well, now, I think they can be a different, the identity can be different. That doesn't necessarily mean a bad thing. That might not necessarily be a bad thing. So, like, do you agree? Let's start with the premise of whether or not the Lakers' identity shifts a bit here.
No, I think it's a really good point. I think the defense probably gets a little worse and the offense gets... I think the offense gets better than the defense gets worse. Yeah. I think it's overall a net positive. Been talking recently about how Rondo's important. Like, you just saw how things were less gunked up in those 14 minutes that
for
he played.
Phoenix or for...
Sure, all of the above.
Yeah.
He's small on the defensive end, and that gives you opportunities in ways that other guys don't. But he had 5 points, 7 assists, 6 rebounds in 14 minutes, and he was a +4. And just the offense was a lot better. Mm-hmm. And so that you know, he's going to be an important guy. He's the one guy who can kind of loosen things up and have us win a shootout type of game along with Kuzma. Like, basically, they helped us win a shootout. This was our first one this season. Maybe it was a shootout in part because of their defense, maybe more Rondo than... But Rondo only played 14 minutes, and Caruso was getting back cut all night, although he did a nice job on Booker overall. But I think you're really onto something with that.
Yeah, like I said, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I actually think it winds up being a good thing. Because Pincus had a report that there's an anonymous executive who told him that he wasn't sure that LeBron's defense as he was playing it was going to hold up for the year, right? And there might be something to that, maybe. Mm-hmm. But I do think, though, when you have LeBron James and you have Anthony Davis and you have Kyle Kuzma and you have Danny Green, and like those are the kind of guys that if a shootout pops up, if something pops off like it did tonight, that's enough firepower to match just about any team that's going to be out there. So I don't have a problem with it if their identity shifts a little bit. It's just about how far it shifts and how reliant upon Rondo they get. Because I don't want... So you mentioned Caruso, and yes, it was maddening. Like, every other play, it felt like with Caruso on the court, he was getting back cut. It was something to behold, really. You have to try to get back cut as often as Caruso was. But he finishes the game with a +15, and I thought really changed the game with his defense on Booker. So, like, actually, one of the points I made at the end, right before we started recording, was that I actually think Rondo shifts Caruso into a more natural role. Would you?
Yes. Caruso is like our defensive guard. He's the guy off the bench, along with Avery Bradley, that really provides that. That's why it was interesting to watch him alongside Bradley to end this game rather than Dwight. That was an interesting substitution that Vogel went to. And Caruso's the guy. He's earned the trust of Vogel to be their like go-to guard defender, as has Avery Bradley. But a lot of times in the NBA, like, who are the main two shot creators for Phoenix? It's their guards. Yeah. And that's true in a lot of teams. So having the ability to go to that, Caruso played a really good game. The back cuts were frustrating because he was playing ball pressure, but he was out of position. So he'd be like a little turned and wouldn't see his man.
Yeah.
And credit to Phoenix, every time he did that, They cut immediately to the rim. So they're well coached. They're well coached. Really impressed by what Monty Williams is doing over there.
Yeah, that was a fun game. It's actually kind of funny. Heading into this season, you probably thought the Lakers were going to be good in the Pacific Division. The Clippers were obviously going to be good in the division. Golden State might be okay in the division, depending on how things break, and it literally broke on them. Sacramento has picked things up lately, but they haven't met expectations. And then you have Phoenix. Like, this winds up being a pretty fun little division. I don't think it's as insane as like Denver's division or even the Southwest division. I don't think it's that tough, but it's fun. It's a cool little division. The dynamics between these various teams. Last point before we get to the other side of the break, and I want to talk. There's a ton of stuff, really. This is a fascinating game. But Davis goes to the locker room again, was holding his shoulder at points in the game, was holding his ribs at points in the game, was holding his ankle after Baines committed a flagrant. And by the way, Baines, if I see you, I'm going to contact somebody who is way bigger than me to try to intimidate you. But do you think Davis should maybe take tomorrow off? He probably should, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I really like the culture that they're building with this mm-hmm. team. You know, maybe it's reckless. I don't know. I've answered this a couple of different ways.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm just in a place where it's been so long since the Lakers have had a good team. And I think we underrate.
I just want to see it all the time.
Sure. Yeah. No, sure. Sure. But even beyond that, like, part of becoming a good team and the playoffs and succeeding there is going through battles together and like fighting through those bumps and bruises. Mm-hmm. That's really what it comes down to. How much of this is a bump and bruise or how much of this is a legitimate injury? I'd like to think he would not be playing if this was a legitimate injury. Mm-hmm. Is he banged up here and there? Yes. Dude is involved in so many plays, whether it's as a scorer or otherwise. He's going to get dinged up more with how hard he plays, how recklessly he flings himself into contact. But I don't know. I kind of wanted to see them beat the hell out of the Warriors and like rest for the last 18 minutes of the game because you're up by 35. Let's get one of those.
I think they can probably do that without Davis. The Warriors Maybe. Are bad. The Warriors are just like outright bad. Let's take a quick second. When we come back, we still have plenty of stuff to talk about. I want to come back to Kuzma and the role and whether we saw anything specifically that got him going tonight other than just getting some of his feel back. It was a really fun game. So we're just going to keep talking about it in the way that we know how. Today's show is brought to you in part by Audible. I was thinking the other day, I really miss reading. I am an English major. I write for a living and reading makes me a better writer. It enhances my creativity. It's just a better all-around experience when I actually have time to read. The problem is when you read, you literally can't do anything else as you're trying to do that. So the best place to be able to continue to take in that content while still having the use of your hands and your eyes is through Audible. They're audiobooks, they have documentaries, they have books that you would look for. They have the entire catalog of Game of Thrones, and the reader who does it is just fantastic. He does the voices and everything. It's a really cool experience to be able to take that in as well. One of my favorite aspects of the app is if I listen to an audiobook as I'm getting ready to go to bed, you can actually set a timer for how long you want that to continue to run. So when you fall asleep, you don't lose your spot in the audiobook. So check out audible.com/lockedonNBA or send the text message LockedOnNBA to 500-500. Again, that's audible.com/lockedonNBA or LockedOnNBA sent as a text to 500-500. That's for a free trial, a free 30-day trial that comes with one audiobook and two Audible originals absolutely free. As a member, you get to choose one audiobook per month, regardless of price, as well as two Audible originals for free every single month as part of your membership. So check out audible.com/lockedonNBA or send LockedOnNBA to 500-500 to check out Audible. Pete, I think Aaron Baines just hit another three-pointer.
Jesus, man. That was like one of the few coaching things that Vogel has done where I'm like, you got to change that. You got to switch up your coverage to go out to him. Worked out, you know, he missed a couple down the stretch. But, bro, every time he shot, I was like, that's in. That's in. And most of the time, it was in. But, yeah.
He missed one, and I was like, holy crap, he missed.
Yeah, exactly.
Usually that's reserved for like the Stephs and the Clays and the Danny Greens or whatever. Usually where it's a really, really good shooter and it makes you say, whoa, whoa, they missed when they're wide open. I thought some of that was strategic. JaVale McGee just refuses to go out and challenge three pointers. Like it's just something he's apparently allergic to. You made a point on Twitter today about Rondo and why you felt like this season might be different. It was a different approach for him. And I found that interesting. I kind of sort of disagree or whatever, but I want you to make the point here in a non-Twitter forum, and then we can go back and forth on that.
Yeah, so Rondo, this is not something that I agree with. I think it's kind of lame that he does this. This is simply an observation that I think this is how he reacts. A few times in his career, he has kind of checked out of a situation, whether it was in Dallas. Didn't he have something in Chicago? Maybe it wasn't Chicago, but there were always issues in Boston. Yeah, Sacramento, I think it was. I think Rondo checks out when he thinks the situation he's in is bullshit. Mm-hmm. It's not just wins and losses, although being on a bad team will be one of the results of the situation kind of being bullcrap. But I don't think he respected the environment. Like, he was pretty good up until Christmas. Maybe, you know, that Christmas game really stands out in my head. But he was – can we at least say he was significantly worse when he came back from that hand injury? And that was after the season had kind of gone down the tubes by that point. And, you know, he's sitting a couple of seats down in the courtside seats. Like, he was just mentally checked out. And when he's like that, it's like the basketball equivalent of two middle fingers in the air.
Yeah.
Like, so like so many of his mistakes on tape were like, he's just standing there while the world swirls around him and he gets back cut for a layup.
He's but the not, SpongeBob, like Krusty, whatever crab meme where everything is literally swirling.
Yeah. And he's just standing there and he's getting beat. And it's not like Caruso where he's getting beat because he's playing ball pressure. He's getting beat because he's just standing there letting you do it. So I think this type of team that's actually playing for something with a lot of veterans and just people that he respects, I think there's a decent chance we get I think there's a good Rondo and a bad Rondo.
Yeah, you'll get the better version of Rondo.
I think it will get the good Rondo. Is that a good player? I don't know. But it's not the player that we saw last year.
Yeah, that's that last point that you made is where I get hung up on. Is the good Rondo still a good player? Right? Like, is a checked-in Rondo, does being checked in even matter when it's somebody who is, you know, so far past his prime as Rondo is. Now, tonight, he was fine. Last night, by the time people are listening to this, he was fine. He was a perfectly fine player. He played 14 minutes. That's great. I love that. That's a perfect number for him, I think. I thought, like you said, the offense flowed. You really noticed it in the non-LeBron minutes. I thought you really noticed it there. And so I think there's value that he brings to the table. Is he the only person in the NBA who could bring that value? Is the way some of his stands make it seem in my mentions? No. But he does have a skill set that the Lakers were lacking and will probably help the Lakers in certain situations as a result of having that skill set. The thing I always come back to and the thing that makes me the most nervous is that the Lakers become over-reliant on him because the things he does well tend to be really loud. And the things that he does not so well get ignored because of the things he does well.
I mean, one of the things that he does well is he can dribble the ball. And I wouldn't say that that's loud. It's just
compared to the other guards, it is really loud.
Oh, it was just so nice. Like, I get anxiety watching the Lakers now because I'm just so deeply immersed in it that, like, if something's off or doesn't feel right, I'm very attuned to it, right? And so him checking into the game and kind of how they played and flowed and actually ran real basketball plays, like, yes, did he make some mistakes? And it was more like he's really too small to do anything defensively in this situation, so they scored. But just like the overall how it looked and felt, it was like, ah, yes, that's what basketball should feel like with a competent second unit. So all in all, I'm happy. And this type of performance is indicative of what I was talking about in terms of what I think he'll be. Because that little stat line he put up, I know it's just stats, but that 5, 7, and 6 in 14 minutes, bro, that's stuff in the box score in very little amount of time. And I thought we felt the on-court impact as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any complaints with, you know, there was the one play where the ball, I think LeBron skipped it to him out of the post and he was wide open. And you have to take that shot. He passed up on the shot, missed the layup, and then fouled 90 feet from the basket. Like, that stuff drives me insane. It's weird how few people at me when he does that compared to like when he makes a three pointer or something. But that's the thing, like, that's the play that, and I think he sat, like, pretty quickly shortly thereafter, after that play, which I don't know if that was a result of his minutes restriction or if that was Frank Vogel saying, okay, they are not going to pay any attention to Rondo and we need to get a few baskets here. Offense matters a lot more. And given, seeing as LeBron and AD were going to be on the court, Rondo was endlessly less important in those situations. So I thought it was a good sub by Vogel, if it was an actual sub and not the minutes restriction. But yeah, overall, that was a fine game. If that's what the Lakers get from Rondo on a nightly basis, where it's in 15-ish minutes and Caruso still gets his minutes, then I'm perfectly fine with how the game played out. I'm perfectly fine with that. Speaking of Caruso, really quickly before we get out of here and throw to the third segment, is there anything that's going to get him going offensively?
Probably not. I think he's a guy that he can cut a bit. You can use him as a screener. Lakers used him a lot as a screener for LeBron tonight. Ooh,
he's going to be the new
final.
He's going to be Lonzo. The new. Yeah, the new.
He's always, his game's always been a lot like Lonzo.
Yeah.
Like, it never gets compared, but the things that he does well, that like fun in between, you know, little things, setting screens, really active on defense, they're very similar type of games. So he can get some buckets off of setting screens and cutting, especially in those lineups where AD is the five and the spacing is a little bit better. He's going to have to hit down, knock down shots here and there, but that's basically his role on this team, is to do the dirty work, like setting screens and just play his ass off on defense.
Yeah.
And like offensively, I don't know. This is about what I expect from him.
Yeah. I thought last year's shooting at the end of the year was pretty fool's goldy. And he was shooting, I think, above 40% from 3-point range. And that was never going to be the case. I think he's going to be better than he shot the ball so far this year. I don't think he's shooting the ball very well this year. I think he'll sit somewhere in the middle, probably closer to what he is right now compared to where he finished the year last year. But look, if he plays defense the way he played defense tonight on Devin Booker, then that's fantastic. I mean, it got to the point where Booker was forcing the issue against him just for the sake of having been pissed off because of a couple calls or no calls that went that way. I thought that was great from Caruso. I thoroughly enjoyed. I rewound.
Do you remember
it.
Sasha? Anthony, yeah. You remember when Sasha used to do that?
Yeah.
Sasha Vujicic was the best.
I podcast with Harrison twice a week. I couldn't forget Sasha if I tried.
But I mean, like how he played, he would piss guys off and just get them. Like, that's what Booker was doing on that. There was one possession where he really tried to bully Caruso. He actually did it twice in a row, but one where he was like, bump, bump, bump. And on the third one's like, AD's like, yeah, you're up in your feelings. You're not passing the ball. I'm just going to take this from you. And he stripped him.
Yeah.
But Sasha used to do that all the time. Just get guys just like, I'm just going to fuck this dude up. Like, just they get out of the whole team idea and just like, I want to destroy you. And that could be good.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for the game that, like, I walk away from it and be like, yeah, I would like to play on a Devin Booker team. I'm still waiting for that game. All right, let's take another quick second here. When we come back, we have a few things to wrap up with on this game, and if we have time, we'll open up the mailbag. So Devin Booker, Karl Anthony Towns, and D'Angelo Russell want to be on the same team together. Has there been a more punchable team like in the history of the NBA?
People, part of the hate of D'Angelo Russell was always, he's this like pretty boy. I heard the word fuckboy tossed around a lot, and I'm a little too old.
That was Byron post game, like all the time he threw it out there.
I probably shouldn't use that term because I don't entirely know what it means, but it's kind of this like douchey,
yeah,
pretty boy type of guy. And D'Angelo is, yeah, I can see how he pings on one's radar in that respect. And then combine that with like Booker and Towns have some, even Towns is like, you know, he's the guy that Jimmy Butler,
that's the
punked, and everybody thinks he's this spoiled brat, and Devin Booker has a lot of that too. I kind of love it, man. They'd be one of the villains of the NBA.
But they wouldn't want to be villains. The problem is that, like, so it's
one thing. That makes it even better. They're, like, naturally hateable. It's not even something where they're trying. It's not an act.
They like, just can't like, figure out why nobody likes them.
Yeah. Well, but they don't care. Nobody likes them because they're oblivious to their own, like,
yeah,
hateability. I don't know. I'd love to see that trio because everyone would hate that team.
Yeah. As long as it's not on the Lakers.
Pretty good. They'd be pretty good.
No, I don't think they would. Their like offensive rating would be 200. Or defensive rating would be like 200. They would never get stops ever. It would never happen. All right, let's. What was I've brought up the last few points, but what from this game stuck out the most to you? Like, what did you think? One thing that I really noticed, I thought this was the first time the Lakers did this. I thought to a fault. While you kind of, I put you on the spot there. So while I talk, you can come up with something. But
no. I'm in it, man. I'm in it.
Well, I thought they matchup hunted to a fault to the point where they had Dwight Howard with multiple post touches. Let's not do that. Like, Dwight's value has been in that he hasn't had post touches.
Yeah, he had like three in the second quarter or something like that, and like five possessions. It was like, that's more than he's had all year. I think he'd had two post touches before then, and I think he only scored on one of those three.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I could nitpick here and there. Their defensive intensity was not what it needed to be. They made a lot of mistakes in, you know, two guys close out to one shooter, leaving a third guy open. Phoenix was hot as balls from behind the 3-point line.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually the thing that stood out most to me about the whole game. I know it's not Lakers related, but like the Suns are a legitimate professional NBA team.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's cool that it's not just I don't enjoy the dumpster fire teams. Like, I would love for there to be 30 teams who at least,
you just said, like, you would want to watch Devin Booker, Karl Anthony Towns, and D'Angelo Russell.
You said their offensive rating would be 200. No, and I don't
defensive.
You just, yeah, both. I enjoy teams kind of having their act together. So I liked watching Phoenix tonight.
Yeah. I like teams that, I just think with the advent of the process and building through the draft and tanking and recognizing how the value in that, and even some of it goes also to, well, if you could have a draft pick on a similar contract as an NBA veteran, the kid coming out of college, there's probably more value there because you're going to have that player under team control for longer than most of those veteran contracts at the similar rate. And what has happened as a result of all of that is I feel like professionalism has been somewhat devalued, even while we see example after example after example of, holy shit, this team, the Suns now have Dario Saric, who is a professional, Aaron Baines, professional, Ricky Rubio, professional, Frank Kaminsky, like, not great, but he's been in the NBA, he's been around the NBA for long enough to understand what it kind of takes to be successful here, and there is value there in having guys like that, and it's pretty cool to see that pay off the way that it has thus far for Phoenix.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to see just more teams kind of getting it.
Yep. All right. Let's throw really quickly. We have about 5 or 6 minutes or so to open up the mailbag and try to catch back up. It's been the questions are just coming in at an incredible rate. Frankly, one that it's really hard to keep up with, but I'm not going to complain about that. I appreciate that. We even had some fun ones. Pete, do you have a favorite basketball movie? Like, do you?
Ooh, favorite basketball movie. White Man Can't Jump is my favorite basketball movie.
I said the same thing. We might be the same person.
We are definitely not the same person. Okay.
It's like the Spider-Man meme when the other guy just goes and slaps the Spider-Man he's pointing at him.
He just walks away. Like, I don't know who you're pointing at.
That was good. That was, people are going to think that was playing, but it was not at all. I'm certainly still trying, not. I'm still trying. So White Man, what was your, what about White Man? So like compared to other movies, so you have like the movies that usually come up are like Blue Chip, Space Jam, Hoosiers, Coach Carter, Glory Road. What about White Man Can't Jump is it that draws you to that movie?
There's a level of shit talking in that movie that's like actual, if you've been out on playground courts or out to Venice or just you play pickup basketball. I thought it did a good job of kind of, at least at the time, right? It's a mm-hmm. movie from 1991. So I don't know pickup basketball culture the way that I did when I was younger, but it really encapsulated that time of what it was like to play pickup ball and the different types of characters you'd meet out there. So many of the characters are like these templates for different guys that you run into, and they really, whoever made the movie kind of got what pickup basketball was all about. And I just really, and then, you know, you had the fun extra part of them being hustlers, and you know, there's the black and white dynamic. He's the boy from the white guy who's got the fundamentally sound game, and you know what I mean? And so that whole dynamic, it's just a fun movie from beginning to end that I always love Marcus Johnson's appearance as Raymond, where he's pretty sure he's getting hustled and he's like, I'm gonna come back and I'm gonna shoot all of you.
I really enjoy sports movies that were made by people who you know at some point played that sport. Right? Like, my problem with like Major League 2, for example. Major League 1, all-time great movie. I love that movie. It's a baseball movie. The person who made it understood, like, what goes into baseball. And then in Major League 2, they just, like, forgot that the rules existed and people were just, like, pinch-hitting for no reason in Major League 2.
Yeah. Other movies like Coach Carter and Hoosiers, they kind of have this like underdog story. And then, you know, we come back, raise this program from the ashes type of thing. That's cool, I guess. It's not really my thing. I like White Man Can't Jump because, like you said, with the whole people who actually played the sport.
Yeah.
Because it's like, hey, I know that. Like, it's like inside jokes almost for people who are really about it rather than trying to appeal to a mass audience, which I think they did a good job too mm-hmm. in other respects. But there was something in there for people who like really enjoyed that culture. I remember going to Dominic Massari Park in Palmdale all the time, and we would play, and it was outside. The Antelope Valley is super windy, so there would be some days where, and there's a scene in that White Men Can't Jump talking about gauging wind and whatnot, and that was like a real thing because we play. And then for a shooter like me, that was, you know, what I did best. That was always like, oh crap, it's windy tonight, and like I've got to adjust my jumper and my game to do that. So I don't know, I really appreciated the shout outs and that deeper understanding.
Yeah, it was always tough because when you're playing outdoors, the baskets, like the backboard, tended to be smaller. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you were playing on a bigger backboard and it got windy, you could technically shoot the ball a little flatter and use the backboard a little bit more.
Oh, you know? Especially, you remember those hoops where it would be, you'd like pull it out to the street and then you'd put like sandbags on the back of it so it was portable.
Yeah.
And you could adjust it up and down. Those always had the softest back. You could freaking fire it off of the backboard. I felt like
Tim Duncan all the time.
And it would deaden on the you know, like rattle around like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then, but always you could just fire that shit off of the backboard and you'd still make it.
Yep. I felt great. I was like, Tim's not that fundamental. All right, let's go with the next question here. It comes from Matty, I don't know. Love the podcast, daily listener. Lakers are off to a great start this season in terms of win-loss record, but how much does the lack of three-point shooting limit our title chances? I think this is particularly pertinent given the game that the Lakers just played in.
Yeah, they got to be able to shoot at some point. I hope that what we've seen has been kind of the floor of what they are as a shooting team. Guys are going to regress or, you know, progress. I don't know how math works. Go from 25% to, you know, guys who are 35% career three-point shooters are not going to shoot 24% or whatever from right. three for the whole season. So it's going to start going in. And this was a really good game for that, in that there were several guys who needed to see the ball go in the basket. And a few of them did. Danny Green had been really cold last four games or so. Kyle Kuzma had a Kyle Kuzma night. So those types of things, I think, are really important. And so that was good to see. And I do think the shooting is going to get better.
What I liked about Danny Green was that he was more comfortable taking contested three-pointers tonight.
Yes.
Yeah. I think to this season, and I think this is part of just kind of getting comfortable, because there's the concept of passing up a good shot for a great one, right? Or a mediocre shot for a good one. And a mediocre shot, like a contested three-pointer, even from the corner, is pretty mediocre in terms of shot quality. So the thought is, well, if I get run off the line, maybe I can either dribble myself into a better shot, or because I dribble past that defender, they'll have to rotate and I can pass the ball off and improve the overall shot quality that comes out of this possession. I think Danny Green has done that almost to a fault this year. Mm-hmm. And I really like that. On some plays, when the defender was rotating out hard, he didn't care, and he hit it. It didn't matter. He shot mm-hmm. the ball even with a hand up in his face. And I think, you know, is that you have to find a balance there. But overall, Danny Green's got to shoot. He's got to find as many shots as he can possibly get.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go one more question here to wrap this thing up. It is a Kyle Kuzma question, and seeing as this was it was a bit of a coming out party for Kuzma.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go. Alara7257 writes, to start off, I love the show, listen every day. Even though some people may not like your criticism, as a diehard Laker fan, I really enjoy it. Well, you're welcome. So it's no secret that Kyle Kuzma has not played well with the Lakers, but they're still winning. Do you think he needs to earn more playing time rather than have it just given to him? I just feel like there are other players more deserving, or does he get the playing time because of he's the only wing besides LeBron? Look forward to hear your take on this. So we kind of touched on this last show, but I thought tonight was a good example of why it pays dividends to play him in the situations that they did, even while he was struggling.
You got to let him work through it. You just have to. He's with the talent that he has, the ability to score that's on a higher level than anybody not named LeBron or AD. Let him figure it out. If we need to do something with Kyle Kuzma that's different, that needs to be decided 20 games in rather than 5 games in to his return, right? Or 10 or 15. Just have to give it longer before we start saying, hey, this is fundamentally wrong. He is a fundamentally bad fit for this reason, that reason, that reason. Just let him knock the rust off. I think tonight was a big step in that direction. Even that fourth quarter against Toronto, he missed 2 threes toward the end. He also hit 3. He was 3 for 5 from 3 Chicago in that fourth quarter. Yeah, yeah, he had a good start to that. So he's starting to not – like, the ability to score is not something that I have concerns with him. It's the other stuff. It's the contesting in the paint, the rotating over. He's trying. I'm really seeing a lot of effort out of him. Sometimes he makes the wrong decision, or he's a little bit soft when he should be sending a guy to the free throw line. But all in all, I thought, you know, he's – I'm encouraged by Kuz, even if – there are problems there. He's giving his effort, and dude can put the ball in the hoop. So this is part of that process. If he's going to be the type of guy we need him to be, a real playoff contributor, he's going to have to learn these things over the next half season to full season, because it's not going to happen overnight.
Maybe even seasons, plural.
Sure.
Like, he's going to be a better player, a different player next year than he is right now. I thought what really stuck out to me after this game was over, Kuzma was getting ready to be interviewed by Mike Trudell. I watched on Spectrum. So Trudell is apparently was waiting for him to do the post-game interview. And right before that took place, apparently LeBron and AD were talking mm-hmm. him up right before the interview. I think
they know how important he is, man.
That's it right there. That's it right there. I think, look, even while I have thought that the expectations for Kuzma have been too high this year, it's you would be objectively wrong to not understand the value he could bring to this team. And I think LeBron understands it. The Lakers as an organization understand it. Anthony Davis, who has been around Kuzma less, and Frank Vogel, I think, also falls into this category too. They have been around Kuzma less than the Lakers and LeBron, but I think they at this point understand it. The Lakers need Kuzma to play up to a ceiling because he's the only player on this team that actually lifts that ceiling. Mm-hmm. And I thought the fact that he played the way he did, coming in, again, in a moment that I was questioning the fact that he was coming into that game, but he comes in, plays his ass off, hits those huge shots, and I think the fact that LeBron and AD recognize that, like, that should say everything that that anybody, even the doubters, have to hear about Kuzma, is that the Lakers recognize how important he is to their success.
That point also means we need to be more patient with him
yeah.
than we might be with somebody else.
Yeah.
Like Avery Bradley, Quinn Cook, Alex Caruso, Troy Daniels, KCP, all these guys, their version of it working out means something pretty different than Kyle Kuzma's version of it working out.
Yeah.
Right. And if he works out, like, this is with the defense that they're playing, like, I don't think a title is unrealistic at all. No. And I thought that it was not far-fetched going into the season. I always said we had a puncher's chance, but I think I feel a lot more strongly that we've got a legitimate chance. If Kyle Kuzma works out on top of the type of defense this team is capable of, alongside LeBron James and Anthony Davis, that team can win a title. And that's why we need to be patient with Kuz, even though he's going to drive us crazy sometimes.
Yep. His haircut drives me crazy.
I watched tonight's game with Rhett Reese, who he's been a buddy of Genie's for ages. Rhett was the writer of Deadpool. Of the Deadpool movies mm-hmm. and of Zombieland and of those movies. And so he's just this
he's a Suns fan. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a huge Suns fan. Mm-hmm. So we had him over. They've known each other since college. And it was absolutely hysterical to watch this long tortured Suns fan have to be, I was telling him the whole game, Rhett, your team is good. They're not going to make the playoffs. Maybe they do. But, that's a legitimate basketball team. He's like, no, I can't. I can't. Maybe one of these days I'll get him on the show because he's obviously very hilarious person that'd be fun.
Yeah, next time the Lakers get ready to play the Suns, we should try to bring him on. He's a really nice guy. I really enjoyed
He really is.
We got together for the draft that one time. All right, this was fun. The Lakers winning is fun. I'm going to go ahead and throw this up as quickly as I possibly can so that you guys can enjoy it on your commutes and everything like that. We still have a ton of questions. I'm literally scrolled less than halfway up the iTunes scroll here. So I'm probably going to have to have another mailbag show tomorrow, even despite there being a game. But you know what? That's a good problem to have. Thank you guys very much for sending in those questions. Thank you guys for tuning in the way that you guys have. Thank you very much to the Lakers for getting back on the winning side of things and starting up hopefully another winning streak here. We'll keep an eye out for whether or not Anthony Davis plays and how he feels on the trip back. Second night of a back-to-back. I would probably lean on being conservative here, even while, Pete, the points you made make a lot of sense. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's and screw Devin Booker.